From Iowa Public Radio News, this is The Exchange. Sitting in for Ben Kiefer, I'm Alex Poyer. Last week, retired military leaders released a report critical of food in schools called Too Fat to Fight. They conclude 27% or 9 million young adults are ineligible to serve because they weigh too much. We'll get reaction to this report from U.S. Congressman Dave Loebsack of Iowa's 2nd District. He sits on the House Armed Services Committee. Also during the first half of the show, we'll talk about school nutrition in Iowa and an innovative food service program at the Price Lab School in Cedar Falls. During the second half of the show, a look at the farm-to-school movement and a discussion with an organic farmer from Winnesheek County. That's all coming up on The Exchange right after this news from NPR. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Alex Hoyer in for Ben Kiefer. In a report released last week called Too Fat to Fight, retired military leaders say an alarming 75% of all young Americans 17 to 24 years old can't join the military. That's because they haven't graduated from high school, have criminal records, or are medically unable. And of that 75%, more than a third is because young adults are either overweight or obese. One retired Army general calls the situation a potential threat to our national security. Later in the show, I'll be joined by two people who direct food and nutrition services at schools in Cedar Falls and Cedar Rapids. I'll also be joined by people involved with a relatively new movement called Farm to School. But first, I'm joined by Democratic U.S. Congressman Dave Loebsack of Iowa's 2nd District. Within the past year, Congressman Loebsack has introduced legislation in the House to help feed more school children and improve the healthiness of that food. Welcome to the program, Congressman.
Thanks, Alex. Good to be here as always.
Great. Now, you sit on the House Committee of Armed Services and the Education and Labor Committee. What is your reaction to this new report from the retired military leaders?
Well, as a member of the, as you said, the Armed Services Committee, in particular the Readiness Subcommittee, I find this recent report showing that our future military readiness will be affected by the lack of healthy recruits to be alarming. I think it's very disturbing, and it's obviously of great concern to me, and I think it should be to all Americans. And obviously, I think it's very critical that we make sure that our school cafeterias have access to healthful foods and that we work to streamline ways to make it easier for schools to provide those meals, too, and that they're good meals. It clearly demonstrates, this report does, I think, that obesity is an epidemic in our country. And it's a serious concern on multiple fronts. I think it's not only a serious concern in the short term, and as you mentioned, for our military, it's really a serious concern in the long term, especially when we talk about the incidence of chronic diseases here in America. And I firmly believe that if we can begin at a very young age to make sure that our children have healthful options and that they are healthy, that we really can go some distance to preventing the high incidence of chronic diseases we see here in America. And I think at the same time, we can actually keep our health care costs down as well. So this is one report, I think, that reflects one aspect of the much larger problem.
How much of the blame is really good to be placing on schools because kids seem to be less active these days? I mean, how much of the blame should be placed on schools?
Oh, I'm not placing blame as such on anyone. I think that we've just got a situation here in America where we have to take a harder look at what our children are eating. You know, myself, as somebody who grew up in poverty, it was often difficult for us, you know, to think about even where the heck the next school meal, the next meal is going to come from. And clearly providing these kinds of meals at all, hot lunches and breakfast for children, especially for poor children, I think is a great step and has been a great step in the right direction. And what I'm trying to do now, when we reauthorize the school nutrition bill, what I'm trying to do, obviously, is make sure that our children have even better choices in the schools. And again, I've visited a number of schools in the district already, and I'll be doing some more in Burlington and Keokuk. I've been in Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, Ottumwa, a number of places. And I think that, overall, our school administrators are doing a fantastic job within the means that they have. But we've got to make sure we get more children enrolled in those programs who deserve to be enrolled. And then we've got to make sure that we keep improving the quality of the food that they're eating as well.
You mentioned the reauthorization of the federal school nutrition bill. What is the current status of that?
Well, as you know, in the Senate, the Agriculture Committee has already passed out one version, and I'm on the Education and Labor Committee, as you mentioned, in the House. We're going to be taking this up hopefully soon. As you know, I'm not one to give predictions as to where legislation is going to go, but this is something that we're going to be taking up soon. And some of the bills that I've introduced have already been included in that legislation in the Senate, and I'm looking forward to moving, obviously, the bills that I've introduced to make sure first that as many children who should be in the school lunch program and the school breakfast program, in fact, are in that program, and second, to make sure that we improve the purchase and processing of healthful USDA food commodities for use in the school meal programs. I'm hopeful that both of those, or at least components of both of those pieces of legislation, will ultimately be incorporated in the reauthorization.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you strike a balance between having the federal legislation affecting schools when school policies are often a state and local issue?
Great question, Alex. As it stands now, there are federal guidelines for these school lunch programs. How the schools implement those guidelines is entirely up to them. There's tremendous flexibility at the local level, and I think that's what we have to maintain. I'll tell you, in my conversations with folks at these various schools where I went over the course of the past few weeks, I've listened to what they've had to say. We don't want the federal government, or any government for that matter, to be overly burdensome or overly intrusive as to what the schools do. At the same time, the folks at the schools who are in charge of these programs, they understand that those meals have to be nutritious. They understand the problem. They're doing everything they possibly can. I know, for example, you just said you're going to have someone who represents the farm-to-school movement on later. I think that's a great movement. We've got to be a little bit careful because administratively, it's difficult, obviously, for the schools to go beyond what they've already done in terms of where they get their food from, the different vendors, that sort of thing. But I'm a big fan of certainly of those community-supported agriculture efforts. I know many folks involved in that, local food systems. Those are healthful foods. Those are fresh fruits and vegetables. Obviously, to the extent to which we can get more of those into the school diet, I think that's a wonderful idea. And I'm looking forward to listening to what your guests have to say about that as well.
I've been speaking with Congressman Dave Loebsack of Iowa's 2nd District. Thank you for joining me, Congressman.
Thanks, Alex. As always, I really appreciate it. Take care.
Joining me now by phone from Cedar Rapids is Julie Hauser. She is the president of the School Nutrition Association of Iowa and the Nutritional Services Director at the College Community School District in Cedar Rapids. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Alex.
Now, we were just talking about this new report by retired military leaders called Too Fat to Fight, which is largely critical of the food that's served in schools. What is your reaction to that report?
Oh, Alex, I kind of think it's not a good report as far as school lunch is concerned. There's a lot of issues that go into a child being obese, and I think it's kind of unfair to blame it strictly on the school lunch.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're in charge of the food service at the College Community School District there in Cedar Rapids. Give us a little bit of background as to how many meals that you serve a day.
We serve approximately 3,000 to 3,500 meals a day, K-12, kindergarten through 12th grade.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us about the traditional way that schools would normally get food.
Well, traditionally, we would purchase food from vendors, local vendors. There's Reinhardt in the Cedar Rapids area, and there's also Hawkeye in the Iowa City area. They're both food distributors, and then Martin Brothers in the Waterloo area. And we would, you know, get a bid, an informal or a formal bid, on the food that we purchase or the supplies, and then the lowest bidder would either you know, a combination of Hawkeye and Reinhardt would deliver those goods, or some schools now are, you know, doing single vendors, like a cooperative type food program.
Mm-hmm. And this is somewhat arranged through the United States Department of Agriculture, or is that something else that I'm thinking about?
How we purchase our food?
Mm-hmm.
That's locally. Well, I mean, our bidding is USDA required. You know, there's mm-hmm. Guidelines that we have to follow. But as far as how I purchase, you know, I follow the USDA guidelines as far as bidding formally or informally. But after that, it's pretty much my choosing.
Sure. Now, state laws will take effect this July, which will limit what can be served in schools in the state of Iowa. Give us a little bit of background about what kind of on-the-ground changes are going to be happening.
Okay. The Healthy Kids Act is pretty much focusing on the a la carte that we might sell. You know, if we were to sell a cookie as a part of the lunch, a larger cookie as part of the lunch, or it would be focusing on the vending machines. It's focusing on if you sell things out of your school store for kids, you know, food items, or fundraising, like student-to-student fundraising. Those are the areas that the Healthy Kids Act is focusing on.
Do you think that this is going to be a challenge to switch over, or not so much?
Personally, we have been making, you know, small changes for the last couple of years since we knew that this was going to be coming. So we have been looking for healthier choices, and we had a little area that we called the a la carte room, which sold large sandwiches or chicken sandwiches that, you know, the kids really liked. So we've kind of scaled those kind of things back. We've, you know, started doing more lunches out of that area, adding fruits and vegetables to make a lunch to go with the sandwiches that they buy, and pretty much selling, you know, mainline or lunch line items out of the a la carte room. Some of the problems that I see happening, there's a calculator that Iowa has set up that for any a la carte that we sell or any vending that we sell, it has to be approved through this calculator for added sugars, fat levels, calorie count. And right now, there aren't a lot of products out there that do meet the calculator. And some of the things that do meet the calculator, I think will be questionable in a lot of people's minds. Like a Nutri-Grain bar does not meet the calculator, but a fruit by the foot does meet the calculator. So I think there's going to be some, you know, just people wondering why the kids are getting a fruit by the foot when we can't serve or sell a Nutri-Grain bar.
We'll pick up with this conversation in just a moment. I'm speaking with Julie Hauser, the president of the School Nutrition Association of Iowa and the nutritional services director at the College Community School District in Cedar Rapids. We'll be back in about 1 minute. Back with The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio, I'm Alex Hoyer. Continuing our conversation this hour with Julie Hauser, the Nutritional Services Director at the College Community School District in Cedar Rapids. Also joining the conversation from Iowa Public Radio Studios in Cedar Falls is Jackie Bilyeu Holmes, the Program Director of the Price Lab School Grassroots Cafe in Cedar Falls. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Alex. Thanks so much for having me.
Great. Now, Jackie, let's start with you for this last part of our first half hour. Explain what the Grassroots Cafe is.
Grassroots Cafe is actually our program at the Price Lab School down in the cafeteria. It got started with several parents who decided to get together and just kind of take a look at the lunch. There was a lot of stories in the news about contaminated meats that made them take a closer look. And when you take a closer look, you see a lot of trans fats, food coloring, and chemicals. And they decided, you know, it's not going to be an easy change. We have to kind of just do a whole program change. And that's where Rob Stanley and I came in with our four goals and trying to make food nutritious, delicious, support our local economy, educate our students, and then creating our garden.
So you completely eliminated the food service contracts that you had. And this was just last year, right?
It sure was. Yep, we got started in July, creating menus, looking at scratch cooking, seeing how much produce, beef, milk, bread we could purchase locally trying to kind of reduce all of those yucky things that you find in food and also eliminating all that unnecessary packaging.
Really using that kind of farm-to-school model that we're going to talk about now, but also talk much more in depth about in the second half of the show. Using the farm-to-school model.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, give us a little bit of background about how many meals that you serve a day up there.
Well, our meals actually are increased in breakfast. We went from serving about 23 to 32 students, and our lunch jumped from 160 to 220. And then we also provide lunches for the Child Development Center here on UNI campus, and that is 95 meals.
Mm-hmm. And about what percentage of food comes from local farmers?
Currently, we have about 40% of our food is local and organically produced. So we've actually been able to put almost $21,000 back into the local economy by those purchases.
Mm. Julie Hauser at the College Community School District in Cedar Rapids, do you think that this type of farm-to-school model would work at a district the size of College Community?
It would be hard. With 3,000 to 3,500 meals we serve a day, I'm just not sure there are people in the area that would be able to supply the quantities that we need.
Because mm-hmm. You would have hundreds of apples in day? I mean, talk a little bit about the numbers. What kind of food that you would need to have supplied by local farmers?
Well, on a average basis, the apples, we have seven schools, a high school, middle school, intermediate, and four elementaries, plus we also do daycare. And probably for one day apples, we'd need close to 1,200 apples. And that's just for one day. And they may have some left that they would use then throughout the week, but we would need, 1,200 apples, peas, frozen peas, 300 pounds, corn, which is a very popular vegetable, 480 to 500 pounds of corn just for one meal. As far as meats, I wouldn't even know where to start to find 300 to 400 pounds of pork roast.
Mm-hmm. Jackie Bilyeu-Holmes, we're hearing this argument that it might be difficult to implement this farm-to-school program on a large scale. What's your response to that?
It is definitely different looking at larger amounts of food and food and produce, but it's definitely out there. Using organizations that are out there, I know the Northeast Iowa Food and Farm Partnership does a great job at helping source these items and bringing them in. We hear a lot of times, your school is so small. Our school is small, but four hands started this program. So these larger schools, even if you had 20 people that were interested, 20 parent volunteers can shuck a lot of corn and cut a lot of melon. So I think the food is definitely out there. It's just perhaps we need to just educate folks on how to get it into the schools and then get it processed once it's in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Julie Hauser, we're talking about this farm-to-school movement about trying to get more fresh food into school, but you can improve nutrition and not necessarily get food from local farms, right?
Oh, correct. We, all the vendors, the Hawkeye, Reinhardt, Martin Brothers, they all have fresh produce, apples, oranges, spinach, cauliflower, broccoli. You can increase the amounts of fresh produce without going farm to school.
Mm-hmm. What are some other examples? You mentioned broccoli and some other fresh produce, but what are some other examples of maybe substitutions that you can make that might be noticeable? They might not be noticeable.
I don't know that you would know the difference, honestly, from, and maybe I'm wrong, a broccoli purchased from Hawkeye versus a broccoli purchased from a farmer. Apples, we did hear a orchard owner speak one time, and, she said that unless you want worms in your apples, we really have to spray the pesticides just like a larger producer would. So I think that you would be hard-pressed to see a big difference in farm-to-school versus how we do it.
Previously, you had mentioned that there have been some small changes that you've been taking at the College Community School District in advance of the law, that the state law that takes effect in July. What has been the reaction from students?
Well, initially, it wasn't positive. You know, they definitely like their cookies. They like them big, and they like them soft, and they like them warm. But we've kind of downsized those a little. We've gone to making our own cookie. Before, we were purchasing a cookie dough that we would make. It was like a, you know, just a nice chocolate chip cookie. But we've made oatmeal cookies and oatmeal chocolate chip or scotcheroo kind of cookies that are a little more healthy, not quite as big. We have a chicken sandwich that we use that is, you know, not as good as the whole breast meat chicken sandwich, but it's also less expensive for the kids.
So what kind of, what do the students, well, I guess the question is, what do you tell the students after they say, we want bigger cookies?
Well, we just tell them that, you know, we can't sell those cookies. You know, we've explained the Healthy Kids Act and the nutritional needs that, or the, you know, the nutritional guidelines that are coming down. And so, you know, for the most part, if you're, you know, educate them and communicate with people, they kind of understand.
So what is that education component? Is it something that happens in the classroom? Is it a flyer that's sent home? What is that education component?
Well, I have spoke with the student council, Prairie Student Council, you know, explaining what the changes are going to be. I spoke with the principal at Prairie High School, you know, so at least if he received concerned or questions, he understood why the changes were being made. We definitely are making, you know, education within the classroom, you know, there's a wellness council that a wellness committee that has been, you know, making changes all along. Our vending has been changed probably 4 or 5 years. You know, we've made, you know, remarkable changes in our vending, getting out some of the candy bars and putting more nutritious options in our vending.
Given your position as the president of the School Nutrition Association of Iowa, do you think schools are prepared to make this switch in July?
Whether they're prepared or not, they should be. I mean, I think they've known that it's coming for a year and probably 2 years. You know, people that rely on their a la carte, you know, so that they can do more fresh produce and add, you know, fresh vegetables or fresh fruits to their menu, you know, it is really a monetary issue, you know. So if we are required to put on more if we're really going to be expected to serve fresh produce, we really need some way to pay for it.
Sure. I've been speaking with Julie Hauser, president of the School Nutrition Association of Iowa and the nutritional services director at the College Community School District in Cedar Rapids. Coming up on the program, we'll take a deeper look at the farm-to-school movement. We'll continue the conversation with Jackie Bilyeu-Holmes from the Price Lab School in Cedar Falls. We'll also speak with someone from the University of Northern Iowa Center for Energy and Environmental Education and a farmer from Winnesheek County in northeast Iowa. This is Iowa Public Radio. Back after this break. We're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Alex Hoyer. We're continuing our conversation this hour about the farm-to-school movement, where food goes directly from local farmers to schools. Give us a call at 1-866-780-9100 or send us an email at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org and tell us your story about nutrition in school. Are you the parent of a school child with a unique food service program? Or maybe you're fed up with what schools are serving. That number again, 1-866-780-9100, or send us an email at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Jackie Bilyeu Holmes, the program director of the Price Lab School Grassroots Cafe in Cedar Falls, is still with us. Also joining us is Andrea Geary. She's the local food program manager at the Northern Iowa Food and Farm Partnership based at the University of Northern Iowa, joining us from Iowa Public Radio Studios in Cedar Falls. Welcome to you.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
Also joining us is Glenn Ellsburn, an organic farmer with land near Ridgeway in Winnesheek County in northeast Iowa. Welcome to the program, Glenn.
Thanks for having me today.
We'll start with you, Andrea Geary. Tell us a little bit about the food to food and farm partnership at UNI Center for Energy and Environmental Education.
Sure. The Northern Iowa Food and Farm Partnership really has its history built in developing strong relationships between farmers and food buyers. We're a geographically based regional group, so to speak. We serve primarily the seven counties surrounding the Waterloo-Cedar Falls area. And because of our rich history in developing close bonds and relationships with farmers and food buyers of all kinds, the farm-to-school movement is something that has fit in very nicely with our program.
And explain this farm-to-school movement. We've been talking about it. Is it just as simple as local produce, meat coming from local farmers directly to schools? Is that really what it is?
Well, that's certainly a very important part of it, and I think that's where it can begin, is in schools making the decision to purchase food locally, supporting their local farmers, supporting our economies and our communities. But it should also be much more than that, and I think as far as schools are concerned, in our society, they provide a really great environment to provide educational opportunities for our children. And many of the schools that are implementing farm-to-school programs take field trips to farms. They meet the people growing their food. Farmers actually come into the schools and do demonstrations and talk a little bit about the food that they're growing and that the kids will be eating later on in that day. So there's certainly also a curriculum component involved.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that the food from local farms going to schools has been going on to some extent for years and years. But really, how recent is this relatively new farm-to-school movement?
Yeah, I think the purchasing or procuring of local foods by schools is relatively recent. The past few years, really, it's been supported by organizations but like the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture, the National Farm-to-School Network, have really been pouring resources and staff time into further developing, groups of farmers that are working together, laying the groundwork really to improve the capacity for the state of Iowa to provide local food to schools. So in an organized way, it is relatively new, Alex.
Mm-hmm. Glenn Ellsburn, our farmer from Winnesheek County, tell us a little bit about your farm. What do you grow up there?
Oh, I grow a little bit of everything. I've got about 30 different vegetables that I grow. My main crops are potatoes, broccoli, head lettuce, spinach, and this will be my a young farmer. This is my going into my third season.
Mm-hmm.
And
tell us how you got involved with the farm to school movement.
Well, I work with Grown Locally up here in northeast Iowa, and it's our coordinator has been active with working with the local food initiatives to get it into schools, and that's kind of how I've gotten in with it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. What, if anything, do you do differently when you're preparing the food that will go to the schools?
I go through the same way of getting it ready as I would for any other wholesale buyer.
Mm-hmm.
So,
when they would come to you, when the buyer would come to you, do they express any particular wishes about how the food is transferred or harvested or anything like that?
It's the same that way. With the potatoes, a lot of times they want them a lot cleaner than other wholesale buyers that way. But basically, we strive to have the highest quality we can get to them. So.
Mm-hmm. Jackie Bilyeu Holmes is still with us, the director of the Price Lab School Grassroots Cafe in Cedar Falls. We're talking about what schools might expect from the local farms. What do you expect?
Well, I think when our food comes in, one thing we really like to see is, Julie was talking about, you know, the imperfections in the food. We actually embrace those imperfections. If you look at a tomato that may be a little lopsided or it may have a little wormhole on the side, that tells me it's not covered in wax. It's not covered in pesticides. That tells me that it's not going to taste like water because it's come from California or it's come from Mexico. It's come from a few miles down the road. And it's a tomato off the vine actually tastes as sweet as a piece of candy. And that's what we want our children to experience. When you look at the students at our school, they get so excited when they see a purple potato or they see a yellow watermelon or a yellow plum. They're really excited about it, and they think that it tastes really amazing.
Mm-hmm. So there's not – I mean, if I were to see a purple potato, I might say to myself, what is this? Is there something wrong with this potato? Do the students question that?
Oh, absolutely. We get questions like, how did you color the watermelon to make it yellow? And that's where the education piece comes in, is letting them know that, nope, it actually comes out of the soil yellow, and it looks great and it tastes great. So the education component is very important, teaching kids about organic foods, about local foods, the importance of them, and then also healthy food choices in general.
Mm-hmm. And how do you go about educating those children?
We have classroom visits partnered with our school guidance counselors and our school nurse, making sure that we get classroom time, doing exercises. We'll hold up a picture of a piece of whole grain bread and maybe a piece of ice cream and say, which is a healthier choice? Mm-hmm. Which do we want to eat more of? Knowing that there's no food you should never have. It's just we definitely want to limit the unhealthy choices. We also give them kitchen tours and have them try to experience doing something in the kitchen, whether it's watching a demonstration or helping us create our salads.
Mm-hmm. We have an email from Candy in Marengo. She writes, just because changing our school lunches would be hard doesn't mean it's not worth doing it. I agree with the guest from College Community School District that school lunches aren't the sole cause of obesity, but when many of the children get 2 out of 3 meals a day at school, it sure contributes. She writes that there are some fresh fruits and vegetables on College Community's menu, but there are also pork tenderloins, chicken nuggets, chicken sandwiches, shrimp poppers, all processed foods that are found at schools that need to go. And in fairness, Julie Hauser is no longer with us on the program, but I mean, school lunches, at least when I remember school lunches, it was about having that chicken sandwich, those chicken nuggets, the days that you really looked forward to, that you circled and highlighted on that menu that you took home. What other things do you do if you're not having these processed foods, Jackie Bilyeu Holmes?
Well, by eliminating all of the prepared things like that, like the chicken patty, and the chicken patty absolutely was a favorite among our students, it's looking at what can we create that's just as tasty, looking at spices, looking at a kid-friendly meal, for instance, like spaghetti and meatballs. Where can we source that local meat that's going to be just as tasty, where we can use spices? Our school garden is actually doing a really great job at creating not only our produce or some of our produce, but also looking at herbs and things that we can enhance the flavor of the food. Food that comes processed is chemically engineered to taste good. It's also packaged behind a film and in plastic. So but by kind of eliminating the plastic and getting the food actually on a tray, you can actually see, smell, and taste the difference.
Mm. Give us a call at 1-866-780-9100 or send us an email at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Do you have a story about nutrition in school, maybe the parent of a child with a unique food service at their school, or maybe you don't like what's served at your child's school and maybe pack them a lunch every day? Give us a call, 1-866-780-9100. We have an email from TC. He or she writes, are we being penny wise and pound foolish and not paying the preparation cost of using local and fresh food? The people in charge of school lunches don't really have the budget to provide what I think would be nutritious, delicious lunch that would get kids ready to learn. Let's talk about cost. How much does you mentioned that you've made some money in the first half of the show, Jackie Bilyeu Holmes, but talk a little bit about cost. How do you pay for all this?
Well, this being the first year that we've started this program, we do have some fabulous sponsorship through grants, and we're very grateful for that. Traditionally, school lunches will lose money. So as a program, our goal was actually to try to break even by the beginning of the year. Looking forward into year two and year three, where we're actually getting more efficient in finding out what the students like, how the preparation can take less time, getting correct counts in the classrooms. I think there's just a lot we can do going forward to just kind of make the ship a little tighter.
Mm-hmm. Andrea Geary, local food program manager at the Northern Iowa Food and Farm Partnership based at the University of Northern Iowa. How widespread is this farm-to-school movement in the state? Are you aware of that?
Well, yeah, it's really taking off, Alex, and not only across the state, but certainly across the nation. We currently are, just our partnership alone is working with 6 local schools in helping to provide resources and training and technical assistance in increasing local food purchases and serving them out of their cafeteria to their students. But across the state, there are we receive many requests for assistance constantly. And I know there are other groups that are doing similar work. We serve as the co-lead regional team for the Midwest region as part of our partnership with the National Farm to School Network. And this is something that we're seeing across the Midwest. It's really widespread and rampant. People are learning more about food. They're interested in where it comes from. They obviously are interested in providing the most healthy outcome they can for their children and for students in schools. So it's a very exciting time.
Mm-hmm. Glenn Ellsburn, farmer in Winnesheek County, it would seem like there would certainly be some limitations to the farm-to-school movement because maybe schools wouldn't be in session or it would be during the winter when you're not harvesting. How do you take that into consideration?
Well, it does create quite a challenge, actually, because a lot of your leafy greens, a person's able to have them into the fall a ways, but then otherwise you're limited to more storage root crops, like your potatoes or onions or beets. It's a way that makes students more aware of what is out there that rather than just processed foods.
Mm-hmm. Jackie, can you freeze the foods? It comes in, you can't use it right away, so you'd freeze it. Is that an option?
Absolutely. Freezing is an option. Refrigeration is an option. What we do at Price Lab School is we order for the week, use for the week. So we actually don't capitalize on systems in that way. But definitely that is an option for larger schools that definitely have more capacity to do that.
Mm-hmm. We have a phone call from Anne in Cedar Rapids. Welcome to the program, Anne.
Hi. Great program. I'm really 100% behind getting fresh foods in the schools. I know when they talk about doing fresh foods in the schools, the first thing, especially if it's a big school, they say, well, we don't have the money to hire the extra help. But here in Cedar Rapids, we have Kirkwood Community College, which has a large culinary school, and I don't see why that those students couldn't, for no money, work in the school systems as a college credit towards their degree. And that would help both of them.
Hmm. That's an interesting idea. Andrea Geary, can you take that? Perhaps
yeah.
A partnership with a college or a college.
Absolutely. Those are the types of very creative and innovative solutions that we're seeing are most successful in some of these farm to school programs when different entities or agencies are pulling resources together and. The example that Ann provided is, I mean, that would be a win-win situation for both organizations.
Yes, and they would work alongside the paid cooks, but that would increase the hands in the kitchen doing the fresh foods.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they would get college credit and plus the experience of trying to make something for people.
Yes, it sounds like a good solution, Anne, okay. and maybe we will see some partnerships like that because I know in Cedar Rapids, Kirkwood has their new hotel coming up,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to have a very good working kitchen that will also provide food to the hotel, so maybe providing food to schools as well. Thank you
right.
for your call today.
Well, goodbye.
All right, Jake from Des Moines joining us. Welcome to the program, Jake.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the show a lot, and you guys are touching on some good issues. I was going to say, actually, I think what Ann, the caller before me, was discussing is pretty valid. It seems like I wanted to say something along the lines of, it's a bit of a tangent, but I want to say that, like, I was on, like, free lunches as a child in school, you know, and I know that, I know surely you're aware of, like, programs like that for lower-income families where they don't have to pay for the lunches, you know, mm-hmm. but there was a certain level of, like, segregation that occurred because in my school it was known and it was all charted out and you could clearly be seen by the students behind you in line whether or not you were receiving a free lunch or one that your parents had paid for, and it seems like it should be maybe more on a voluntary basis and that the schools, like, the programs could get donations or money from some sort of other sources other than actually physically having to take money from families to actually feed the kids while they're at the school. And so I feel like, especially if colleges were willing to participate, that you could do it almost entirely on like a you know, free or like kind of volunteer basis.
Mm-hmm. I know there are certain restrictions to the way that schools provide their food, the way that they acquire their food.
Yeah, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Jackie Bilyeu Holmes, with the way that food still has to be acquired, I mean, you still have to follow regulations set forth by USDA.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have to spec out our food. We have to make bids. With our commodities, we actually, because we're part of the University of Northern Iowa, have certain contracts. So definitely there are steps that we have to take to get our food to the table.
Mm-hmm. Is there any sort of, like, back scratching going on to as far as who gets the bids for providing the food, do you think?
No one is scratching my back.
Thank you for the call, Jake. Andrea Geary, what do you think are ways to improve the farm-to-school movement?
That's a good question, Alex. There still is work to be done in terms of building the capacity and really providing a strong infrastructure for a healthy food system in Iowa. And I think this topic was raised earlier in terms of it, you know, being difficult to find food perhaps for food service directors. And it's absolutely not. I mean, we have amazing rich soil in Iowa. We have incredibly talented farmers. We're blessed with organizations like the Leopold Center and other regionally based food systems working group whose job it is to find the farmers and compile information about what they're growing and when it will be harvested and whether or not they can deliver it, for example. So there really are a lot of resources out there. But absolutely, there's work to be done in terms of providing that education to everyone and getting the message out.
Mm-hmm. Meredith from Dayton sent us an email. She writes, I love this idea and would like to help implement such a program in my district, but where do I begin? What resources may be at my disposal to help persuade or facilitate local school officials? Andrea Geary?
Yeah, that's another good question we hear a lot. The National Farm to School Network has a really indispensable website. It's farmtoschool.org, and they have a resources tab, which will tell you everything you need about how to get started in developing your own farm to school program. But one exciting thing is some of the most successful programs I've come to know of are started by parents. And I think that having a good wide base of support within the community is essential.
Mm-hmm. When you talk to people about this, maybe give a presentation on it, is there one example that you point to that is a good example of farm to school?
Well, Price Lab, of course, is an exciting model that I like to talk about. They're unique in that they've really just kind of started from scratch and paved their own way. The Independence School District, Kelly Crossley is the food service director there, and she has been amazingly inspirational to other school models. It's a very common rural public school, and she's really done a lot of interesting things involving planning her menus around, you know, the production schedule of farmers, sitting down with farmers far in advance of the next school year and planning out her menu, you know, making bids and freezing, processing food in advance when it's the most ripe, you know, and mm-hmm. taste the best. And that way she can use frozen strawberries, for example, throughout the year, or fresh sweet corn throughout the year. So those are exciting models, new things that are being done, excuse me, throughout the state.
Mm-hmm. The question of whether larger school districts can go along with this has been brought up, and you said that it could work. Do you have an example of where that is working?
Yeah, Waterloo school districts, actually. Waterloo is a very large school district within the state of Iowa, and they are taking steps to increase the amount of local food that's being procured through their school kitchens as we speak. That's one of the schools that we work with through our farm-to-school program.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that there's this national organization. Is that really the one-stop shop where people should go to find out more information about perhaps starting something like this or finding out more information?
It's a great place to start. Additionally, if you are aware of some type of local food systems working group in your area, there are close to 10 now throughout the state. That would be an excellent place to start locally. Many of these local food systems working groups know about the farmers in your area. They know about the food system and the food assets in your area. So they're an excellent place to start.
Okay. I'd like to thank my guests today, Congressman Lobsack and Julie Hauser from the first half hour. Also, Andrea Geary, local food program manager at the Northern Iowa Food and Farm Partnership at UNI, Glenn Ellsburn, an organic farmer in Winnesheet County, and Jackie Bilyeu Holmes, the program director of the Price Lab School Grassroots Cafe in Cedar Falls. Thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
The Exchange is produced by Jeff Schmidt and Catherine Perkins. Technical support from Dennis Reese. Production assistance today from Rosalind Sixby. Podcasting and on-demand audio from The Exchange available by going to iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Alex Hoyer. Thanks for joining us.